Sport Discovery News. I'm Will Johnson. Welcome to the Friday News Feedbag for the date of July 30th. 2010.
Correct, sir.
Welcome to the show. Discovery News reporter James Williams.
Hey.
And Discovery News reporter Jorge Ribas.
Hi, how are you?
This is a weekly podcast. Every week we bring you our favorite stories from the world, the universes of science and technology.
And beyond, Will. And beyond.
Thank you, James. And you get to vote on your favorite story every week. It's a running competition. We've got so much to get to this week. That's why I'm charging right into the beginning.
You're like a bull in a science china shop.
Yes. And let's see. The score, 15 to 11. So each week when you vote on the stories, we tally up votes. And at the end of the year, we'll decide who wins for the year.
Jorge's still high.
Jorge has won the first 2 years, I believe.
No.
I won the first 2 years. You won the third year.
Hold on. How long have we been doing this? All right. So it's currently 15 to 11 with Jorge in the lead. This week, you, the listener, all of you, collectively, as one listener, voted for Jorge's story about the invisibility cloak made of glass.
That was my story, Will.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
Oh, hang on. Let me double-check the voting.
James is making a comeback.
I know. Look at this. I will not be denied.
James, I owe you an apology.
Accepted, Will. Apology.
It was really close.
Except had.
So congratulations to James, then. It's now 15 to 12. What a roller coaster, huh?
What a crazy ride.
And we have an interview lined up. We have something fun that James has taken it upon himself to do. And
I got all kinds of fun.
Yeah, you've
full of hijinks.
You've lined up this entire show pretty much.
Yeah, so you guys can go.
So we'll get to all new science stories in just a minute. But first, we have an exciting interview to bring to you. I'm going too fast. I got to slow down.
It's our friend Jimmy Rogers from Geeks Are Sexy. He's going to explain to us what would happen if mosquitoes disappeared.
Rogers from Geeks Are Sexy. So what is that, James?
It's a blog.
A blog. Right.
You can find it.
It's a web blog.
We've had him on before.
Sexy.net.
He's a great guy, and he knows a lot about science. Probably more than we do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He's
an actual scientist.
Yeah, right. So he definitely knows.
I'm a scientician, which is a totally different field.
Oh, really? What's that, Jorge?
He just makes science look pretty.
It's like a technician in the world of science.
No, he just makes science. It's like a beautician, only it's for science, making science look pretty.
Yeah.
Let me get him on the line. All right, Jimmy Rogers, are you there?
I am.
Jimmy from geeksaresexy.net. It's good to have you back on the show.
Thanks. It's good to talk to you guys again.
So the kind of the funny part about this is we've introduced that you were going to be on, but I don't think we've discussed why. So, James, maybe you can tell us why we have Jimmy on the line.
Right. So we did a story a couple weeks ago about malaria and about ways to keep mosquitoes from getting malaria. And then one of our listeners wrote in and said, why in the world do we want more mosquitoes? Why don't we just kill the mosquitoes? Wouldn't a world without mosquitoes be better? And then Jimmy alerted us to a little publication called Nature that actually looked at this very topic. And so he is going to explain to us what a world without mosquitoes would look like.
Using the information that was provided in Nature, is that correct?
I feel like it would look a lot like my favorite documentary or one of my favorite, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. A dystopian world.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people would be interested in this information because you think about mosquitoes and they are really ubiquitous, and you kind of see them everywhere you go during the hot times when it's humid, and what Nature did was they went around and asked a bunch of different people not only who study insects but also study the things that mosquitoes interact with.
And Jimmy, I'm sorry, if I could just interrupt real quick. You mean Nature the publication, not Nature the entity?
The Mother Nature.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
The little known, science publication.
Gotcha.
Thanks.
All that one. Nature's reporters, actually Janet Fang, who is in D.C. apparently, went out and talked to all these people. So I just wanted to give a little background in case people kind of know about malaria but don't know the specifics.
That'd be great.
That's okay?
Yes, please.
So malaria is a really nasty disease. It's caused by a protist called Plasmodium falciparum.
One of our favorite words.
Yeah, Latin's awesome. Basically, it enters through the mosquito's salivary glands. It shortly lives in the liver. This is the Plasmodium. Lives in the liver for a bit and essentially avoids the immune system while it can build up its numbers. And then it bursts into the blood and attacks red blood cells. And the problem with this, obviously, is it's killing lots of red blood cells. but also those red blood cells begin to accumulate in blood vessels and stop blood flow, which can cause coma and death.
So what can you do if you get malaria? What do you do?
You know, honestly, I didn't actually look at treatments. I know they have them, but honestly, I just didn't even look at that. So,
all right, that'll be the next show.
I can tell you that sickle cell anemia, which you probably heard, is protective against malaria. The reason for that is that the organism cannot get into and infect the red blood cells the same way.
Hmm.
So that's the natural evolved defense that we have.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
So Jimmy, but back to the Nature article and how mosquitoes, obviously malaria is horrible, but mosquitoes in general, there's different, obviously tons of different kinds of mosquitoes.
Right.
But
there's actually 3,500 species.
Oh, wow.
Is that it? Just 3,500?
And
right. Well, only a few of those actually bite or bother humans. So
right.
I've always heard the really big daddies that you see flying around. Those are the good ones. They don't bite you.
It's the little ones. It's the really little ones.
Yeah, right. The big ones they're like the Gandalfs of the mosquito world.
That's right.
They're like wizards.
Yeah. Yep.
The little ones, the little tiny ones, like those little tiger stripes on them.
They fly around at night, right up, right by your ear, and you can never get them.
And they make that.
Right.
Yeah.
Those great guys.
Like so what did the article find in terms of like what a world without mosquitoes would be like?
Well, essentially they looked at a couple different areas. So the one they looked at first was the Arctic. So you don't usually think of Arctic being mosquitoes unless you know a little bit more about it because you think of hot places.
Right.
But
yes.
The Arctic and also Siberia, huge, huge clouds of mosquitoes pop up during the specific time of the year when they can do that, and essentially they just appear in these large amounts all at once, and they're just a horrible pestilence, essentially.
As if Siberia wasn't like bad enough.
And what are they feeding on? Animals are roaming.
Well, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about food source in a little bit, but
sorry, Jim.
The thing they wanted to point out was that things eat them. So obviously, birds and other things eat them, and so. They asked some people, do you think the birds would be affected if these mosquitoes were gone? And one bird scientist looked at the just number of birds that eat mosquitoes and said the population could be reduced by as much as 50%. Another guy they asked said the opposite and said, we looked at stomach contents and we didn't find all that many mosquitoes, and so they're not an important food source. So
who to believe?
They got a lot of conflicting information.
What about bats? Bats are a big... They rely on mosquitoes, don't they?
Bats do not actually eat mosquitoes very much, according to this article.
Oh.
They do eat them, but not in quantity. Yeah. Apparently, eating a moth is much more efficient than
So if I got a moth house in my backyard, maybe.
I saw a bat last night.
Did you?
Yeah, just flying around.
That's
yeah,
cool.
I did.
Interesting. All right, Jimmy, go ahead. We're sorry.
So another thing that eats mosquitoes is something that eats the larvae is a lot of fish. There's even a fish called the mosquito fish. That eats the larvae. It's like specialized.
Cool.
So obviously fish that do that would be affected. Another thing back to birds, they looked at some house martins, and essentially they sprayed one area that they inhabited with mosquito spray and killed most of the mosquitoes or drove them away. And the other area they left is like a control. And the martins essentially laid one less chick per nest in the sprayed area. So that seems to be an issue.
Yeah.
I just have one thing that I think you'll be interested in.
Yeah, go ahead.
You guys are famous for your love of the pitcher plant.
Yes.
Famous.
And
well known.
Did you know that mosquito larvae live in pitcher plant pools?
And don't get eaten by the pitcher plant?
Right, they're one of the few things.
So
is that good for the pitcher plant somehow?
So the pitcher plant isn't helping us out in this situation. At all.
Or the mosquitoes doing anything beneficial for the pitcher plant?
Right. It's a symbiotic relationship. So apparently the mosquito larvae are filter feeders, so they can actually help digest some of the food that gets trapped, and they obviously get to benefit from that as well. And so it's a little positive symbiotic relationship. So the pitcher plants apparently would be at a disadvantage to lose mosquitoes, and the mosquito larvae keep down the number of other organisms in there, so they kind of balance the environment.
Yeah, how would we get rid of all the world's mosquitoes anyway? What would we do?
Honestly, the article didn't cover that in any real detail. Sure. I think you guys talking about, you know, genetic modification and stuff like that, I mean, I think that's one approach, but it's really difficult because they are in so many different parts of the world, and there's so many of them. It's like getting rid of any insect.
I think we should get rid of malaria, but I don't think we should get rid of mosquitoes. I'll put up with the biting as long as no one's getting sick from it.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So, Jimmy, so what's the bottom line then? So what changes? The answer basically is that they're not sure.
It sounds like there are some animals and plants that would be affected, including the mosquito fish and the pitcher plant, James.
And then there'd be a lot more people alive.
Well, yeah, they talked about that, and they said that even though there would be more people alive, because those people would be healthier, the benefit probably outweighs the detriment of having too many people, because they wouldn't be draining as much money from healthcare funding, and that could go somewhere else, especially in Africa.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like Save the Mosquito t-shirt or something. I feel like they're starting to get a bad rap.
Like how sharks, people have rallied around sharks, you know, and like save the sharks.
Yeah.
So say you want to save the
mosquito. Stop bashing the mosquito.
You should pitch Mosquito Week here at Discovery.
But then the malaria part of it is really not
mosquitoes kill like a million people.
Would you guys have a giant mosquito going through your building?
No, we would not do that.
We have to differentiate the malaria bug, which is bad, and we should eliminate
Plasmodium.
That from the mosquito.
I don't know if you can, though, Jorge.
The moment they're sort of joined
together. Yeah, I guess you're right.
All right, well, Jimmy, we got to get on because we've got a bunch of science that these guys are going to drop on us. But this is it's really great to have your clear, concise coverage of this Nature article.
Well, thanks for having me on. Can I talk about where you can find me on the internet?
You may indeed.
All right, well, I write for geeksaresexy.net, and if you just search Science is Sexy, there's a number of articles on different things that people seem to be interested in science-wise.
Okay.
So that's the best way to find me.
Cool.
All right,
thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jimmy. We appreciate you having us on, or rather, our show.
Thanks for letting us
on. You can come on anytime.
I was thinking about something else for a minute. Thanks for having us on your show, Jimmy. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Yeah,
all right.
Next time.
Take care, bud.
Bye.
What are they doing?
Our old friend Jimmy Rogers. Yep. There he is.
By the way,
there he goes.
We should apologize for the levels being all over the map.
Well, I should. I wasn't sure which knob to control Jorge with. So you will find if you lost.
Why am I always
a little bit of hearing? You were so loud.
You were really loud.
The escaped goat for this.
Why are you bringing up goats again, James?
I didn't bring up goats.
Talking about
I brought it up.
All right, we've got a lot to do here. And I know, James, you're leaving early today. Is that right, at 2?
No. I just wanted. I'm excited about the science.
All right, James, you have something that you have that you pretty much took upon yourself again to do this without really. I don't know if you even talked to Jorge about it, but if you talked to Jorge or me, all right, sorry. And it sounds exciting though. Tell us what's going on.
All right, so that was a weird intro.
Sorry, I'm a little scattered today.
A little bit.
A little scattered.
I noticed that. Yeah. The Twitter feed. I
need some green tea or like ginkgo biloba or something like that. To focus.
What is that stuff?
I don't know.
All right.
Sorry, James. Go ahead.
Okay. So on the Twitter feed, I was curious to see if we had any actual people subscribe to it anymore, because when you look at it, it's all basically other news organizations and that sort of thing.
Right. But it's not.
It's not, because I to find out, I asked people to send me one word that I would work into my first story, and we got a bunch.
Oh, you did a test.
Yeah. But then, well, it was a test challenge.
So what percentage of our Twitter
test?
Not a high percent. We have quite a few followers. So
yeah.
Anyway, but it's
but a lot of people got back to you, right? I thought you said like 100.
No, it wasn't 100. I think it was maybe 11.
If we have thousands of listeners, thousands and thousands, which we do have, we should have more people following us on Twitter.
Yeah. Sign up for Twitter.
All right. Anyway, so these are the words that I have to work into my first story: tumultuous, cha-ching, goiter, historical, myopic, platypus, enchiladas. Onomatopoeia, hierarchical, mustache, chlorofluorocarbons.
Wait, did you just incorporate them by saying them in a list right
there? Yeah, but I said I would do it. I said my initial thing was I predict I can do it seamlessly. And I'm confident we can, except goiter is going to be, that's the biggest challenge. But anyway. So,
use them in puns?
No.
Wow.
All right. So listeners, be on the lookout for James's, words and when he's doing his stories, I guess.
And I might
do you have to use them during the course of the stories, or can you use them, say, up to the very end of the show?
No, I said my first story. I'm going to use them all. I'm going to
pack. Oh, in one story?
Yes, sir. That's correct, sir.
I was not listening.
Well,
This is like the word of the day on the Pee Wee Herman show.
Kind of. All right, ready? My first story. My first story, guys, this comes from the Earth Institute at Columbia University. You ready?
Yeah.
You guys may remember...
We should have like a bell that rings every time you use one of the words.
You might remember the tumultuous winter that we had last year.
I don't know if I would describe it as tumultuous. I would describe it more as snowy.
Really? Because I know Will had a frozen mustache when he was outside shoveling the snow.
That's what he has?
I would argue that when you take last year...
Just so our listeners know, I have a beard and not just a mustache. I just wouldn't want to be perceived as a...
You might and now it's so hot here in this area.
Yeah.
I would say that if you were to look at the year's weather as a whole, it's a bit of a platypus of a weather season, and that there's a little bit of everything in there, guys. There's a little bit of everything.
Right.
It was freezing cold.
Why? Because a platypus has like
a little bit of everything.
Duckbill.
In it. So we had it was
Stinger.
Freezing cold, and now Beaver it's so tail. Hot you could fry an enchilada on your sidewalk.
Oh my gosh.
That would make it a. What is a fried enchilada? I feel like that's called something else.
I don't know. But anyway, so I would say...
That's a good point. It's a chimichanga.
It is a chimichanga.
Yeah.
From a historical perspective, the weather last year was...
Wait, what word did you just use that you checked?
Historical?
Yeah. Okay.
Snowiest winter on record for Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia. And so they looked at how that happened, right?
Because it was awesome, by the way. I loved it.
I know. I did, too.
By
I miss it
so
much.
Fourth blizzard?
Yeah.
I don't care. I'll
it.
Take it.
Yeah.
So these folks, they analyzed 60 years of snowfall measurements, and they found that the winter was caused by two colliding weather events. One was El Nino, which we all know. That's the cyclical warming of the tropical Pacific, right? That brought the wet weather in. But the other thing was this a pressure cycle called the North Atlantic Oscillation, and that pushed frigid air down from the Arctic into the East Coast, which then created all sorts of storms. We had thunder, snow, boomers.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys know this or not, but boomer.
What's a boomer?
That's it's an onomatopoeia. It's a word that sounds like what it describes.
But what is a boomer, though? You said we had thunder,
boomer,
snow, boomers.
A boomer. It's like a thunderstorm. It's like when you hear thunder.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's so funny, Jorge?
I don't know. Boomer.
But so you also heard that a lot of people were using this, citing the cold weather as an argument against climate change, saying that climate change wasn't real. How could you know things be getting warmer if it's this cold, right? That's a bit of a myopic view, in that they said that I think we're still going to get cold winters. It's what are you doing?
I don't know. Jorge's looking around.
What's that squeaking sound?
I don't know.
Is it me talking?
I don't hear.
Oh yeah, I do hear that. Do you have a mouse in your office?
I think Will Johnson has a mouse in
Where?
His office.
I do hear
Listen.
A squeaking sound.
I
hear that.
Did you hear that?
Is that your stomach? Anyway, so they're saying that...
now you're freaking me out, guys.
It's either someone writing on a white erase board or it's a mouse.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. You guys
I didn't mean to distract you.
You guys are giving me a goiter. All right, so the...
nice. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, that counts. All right, so...
Isn't that something like on your neck?
Yeah. The... Anyway, but so they're saying that these events, it was an anomaly and it can be explained, and that you can't use the fact that it was so snowy as some sort of counter argument towards climate change. Because despite all of that, the decade between 2000 and 2009, still the warmest on record.
So it has nothing to do with the weather. Just like you can't say like we're in a heat wave right now, that's a sure sign of climate.
All right,
change.
When can
like
we start
like
saying?
No, no, no.
Hey, you know what?
Saying,
it was 120 today.
They're saying what they're. And I don't know about the weather now. I mean, I would think that you could say that you know things are getting warmer
eventually.
Warmer, but they're saying that just the fact that it was that snowy.
Yeah.
You can't use that as an argument against climate change.
Yeah,
because
I feel like I hear this all the time.
But I've heard that stuff like that could be an argument for climate change, because climate change doesn't necessarily have to do with just heating up. It has to do with weird climate incidents, correct?
Like vast fluctuations from hot
like
to cold.
Strange things, yeah.
I don't know.
But they also can't confuse that with the whole ozone whole thing. That's due to chlorofluorocarbons
that
eat up the ozone
layer. I thought that
layer.
They fixed that.
James,
kind of fixed
what's the bottom line?
The bottom line is that in the hierarchical structure of weather anomalies, last year's was a big one, and it's unfortunately, it sounds like it's not something that we can expect to have happen again this year. Unless there's something freaky going on with the North Atlantic Oscillation. The last time it happened was in 1995, 96.
Oh. I can handle a blizzard, maybe two a year.
Yeah.
That's but more than that.
I could bring it on.
Yeah, give me as many.
James and I will be out there with our.
Come on, guys.
Our snowshoes on.
Come on, weather.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, that is my first story.
Did you use all your words?
I can't wait. Yes, how many people bought snowblowers and snowshoes last year that are going to sit in their garage next year when it's like,
I know. People were buying snowblowers.
Yeah.
Like all the stores were running out of snowblowers. Yeah. But you kind of needed them in some places.
You absolutely did.
But it got so – the snow was so much that those things became, I think, almost useless after a point.
No, that's why you go out several times, like as it's snowing. I went out and shoveled.
Yeah, James, yeah.
But did you have
instead
a snowblower?
Leaving it all to be like 2 feet?
Yeah, exactly.
Feet? Yeah.
I don't know. Snowblowers and leaf blowers, in my opinion, are like – kind of
you think that, but
the
then,
lazy way out.
I'll tell you, I was shoveling. And
you need them in northern climbs, man, to get your driveway.
Yeah. The guy in the other yard had one of those things, and I was breaking my back shoveling a driveway.
You get stuff done fast. Yeah. If you live in a place, Jorge, where it snows a lot.
That's true.
You need it.
I'll give you that.
Thanks, Jorge.
Leaf blowers, though? Come on.
Leaf blowers are awesome. I finally got one a couple years ago. It is awesome. The only thing about leaf blowers is that it really makes me want
to
like.
Do you use it to clear the table after you finish eating? You just like get up
like Carl Spackler cleaning up the den.
I do put it on reverse to suck out all the mosquitoes from my yard.
Nice.
Go ahead, Jorge.
That works. One thing I hate is packing material. You know when you order something online.
Someone wrote in and they do not like it when you do that.
I'm sorry. No, it's the pen
banging.
It's a paper.
It was that sound.
Every time Jorge does a story.
I'm going to do it more now.
You don't like peanuts, like the packing peanuts?
Oh my God. I feel like it's such a waste, especially like the styrofoam stuff.
Well, guess what,
like,
my friend? I recently got a package or sent one, or I got one, I guess, because it had compostable peanuts.
I had that too.
And I put them right in my compost.
Was it from a company that sells stereo equipment?
I can't remember. It might have been.
Yep. They're using it.
Do you buy like a
That's
like
cool,
a
though.
Sub,
That's a great
like
idea.
A subwoofer for the show?
I bought a subwoofer.
Because he wants his voice even
bass.
Deeper.
Yeah, we need more bass.
Will wants more bass in his voice.
Is there something that could give more bass to my voice?
It's for my car audio.
Have, like, you're gonna
yeah, so I can listen to the feedback and...
You're going to compete in those bass things where you have the bass so loud that you can't sit in your car anymore?
Yes.
Bass off.
It's called a bass tap out.
Bass tap out.
It is.
Well, really? This is kind of cool. There's a new packing material that actually grows itself. It's made with fungi.
Oh, even better. All right.
With mushrooms. And it's a composite of inedible agricultural waste like cottonseed and wood fiber mixed with mushroom roots. And it's called, they composite together called Mycobond. The actual material itself is called Eco Cradle. And basically, when it's no longer useful, you get it, you take your subwoofer out of the box, you throw the stuff in your compost bin. So it's kind of like what you were saying.
Oh, it pretty much just stole your
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just kind of stole my thunder.
Sorry about that, Jorge.
Great.
But what's cool about this is also, it's since it's based on feedstock and renewable resources, there's no worry about price fluctuations. It's not made with petroleum like styrofoam is. And before you know, obviously they sterilize this before they actually ship it out to people. But it's kind of like they say that the manufacturing process is virtually energy free because this fungus actually grows in this agricultural waste.
Oh.
So you kind of just like composite it together and it becomes like a shipping product.
Could you eat it?
I don't think you'd recommend you doing that because it's cotton fiber, cotton seed and wood fiber plus some sort of a mushroom, but it's heat treated to stop the growth process. It's not harmful at all. I mean, it's just like a sterilized, mushroom.
It's like you cauterize their ability to grow.
Yeah, right. And then you just toss it in the compost bin. What was the stuff that you had made out of?
I don't know.
Corn,
dude.
Is paper?
The corn?
Yeah.
See, that's awesome.
I was out in the Yellowstone National Park last year. And
were at Jellystone.
Here we go again.
And they were making a switch to using, or they'd already made a lot of progress in everything you buy there, like cups or mugs and things like that in the gift shops. Because a big part of the national park experience is actually going in the gift shops. And they were all made of corn, or corn byproduct, or
That's
something
good.
Like that. And they were even looking at getting in their soda dispensers, getting your popular sodas in bottles. Somehow they're made
of corn.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's they should do that. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Let's send them a letter.
I like the mushroom one better, though.
The fungi?
Yeah.
Because you're a fungi, Jorge.
Hey.
I'll be at...
Horrible.
I'll be at Chuckles horrible. Next week. Yeah. All right, James, your second.
Second story.
With like a brick backdrop behind you.
Are you talking about my comedy poster?
Yeah, like a stand-up. Yeah. You're just like...
Guys, the year 2182, if you're still around in 172 years... is
kind of bummed out. I won't be.
I plan to be a little freaky because there's 1 in 1,000 chance that we are going to get hit by an asteroid.
Oh, great!
Yeah, although actually, There's a 1,000 chance that we're going to collide with the Earth, and half of that opportunity, I guess, lies in the year 2182.
That gives us a lot of time to prepare, though.
This has one of the most horrifying names that you could give an asteroid that might smash into the Earth. You ready?
Let's hear it.
It's open parens 101955, close parens 1999 RQ36.
Wouldn't it be funny if they never found a way to shorten that, and every meeting you had about it, you would have to refer to it by its full name?
They should do that. So this appears in the journal Icarus. You can also go to discoverynews.com and read a post about it that Ian O'Neill made on it. I don't know what's wrong with
Owen.
My vowels.
Some people go
my
by
vowels
I,
are failing.
I know what Ian went by. Ian.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I have an irritable vowel syndrome today.
Oh,
apparently.
Oh my god.
Why?
Because I couldn't get the.
Did you say irritable vowel?
Yeah, that was awful.
Thank you.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I did.
Oh.
Yeah, James for the win. Don't even try, guys. You can't beat that one. These things are called potentially hazardous asteroids, PHAs, that have a possibility of hitting Earth due to the closeness of their orbits. The thing is, there's a lot of time between now and then, and there's some fluctuation involved in the orbit. So
by then, we might have moved to a new planet.
Well, no. What? Maybe, but the orbit can change a little bit.
A bunch of us,
me and a whole bunch of other people might be living our.
A bunch of us. Hey, where are you going? A bunch of us are heading to a different planet. What are you guys doing?
We're all going to Titan.
Yeah.
My life will be
a moon.
I will have the.
Just be like a floating head in a jar.
Anyway, guys. Yeah. So it's not definite, but something to think about for your great grandchildren.
All right, well,
no way. Is there even more than that?
I hope by then we figured out a solid way to. There are a lot of methods already that are in place.
Look at how many build a huge shield around the Earth.
We've already solved this problem in theory in so many films and documentaries that I'm convinced
this is not a concern.
It is not going to be a problem.
I did a story on that, actually, on like the whole doomsday asteroid and what you could do. And I remember my favorite idea was one where you paint the side of the asteroid.
I was just about to say, that's
to
and how does that work?
The sun, because if you paint it like white, it will reflect the sun's rays. The sun is like bringing it and it'll change its orbit.
You mentioned that. That's actually what some of the fluctuation is in its orbit, is the fact that these things, as they spin, one side of them picks up radiation from the sun, and then it spins and it lets that radiation off on the other side. Yeah. And I guess, because of how the sun's rays and the heat and all that or whatever affects it, that is what pushes it in or out of its orbit.
Right. But
really
the NASA video, the animation they had, it was just like this satellite, that robot that flew up to the asteroid, and then just two spray paint cans just went out the side and just started spraying this.
Did
they tag it?
Yeah, right.
do some graffiti on the side of the asteroid?
Right.
All right, Jorge.
Disco Dan was here.
Your second story, Jorge.
Then, like, another crew had to come out and clean the asteroid, costing taxpayers. All right, anyway, so what would freak you out more than anything?
Oh, wait.
What, James? Oh, you're going to answer the question?
Yeah.
Mice in my office.
A rooster that could sing.
How about room temperature ice? I can't even wrap my head around that.
I love that idea.
Like, I don't even know what that means.
Well, let's hear about it.
Well, anyways.
Apparently it's something
that... Look straight down in front of you.
Right. Researchers from Spain have found that the underlying mechanisms, and I'm going to try to explain this because it's kind of a little bit dense.
Boring.
No pun intended, yeah. Researchers underlying mechanisms of water condensation in the troposphere and found a way to make artificial materials to control water condensation and trigger ice formation at room temperature. And they said that this kind of work could lead to new additives for snowmaking, improved freezer systems, or new coatings that could help ice grow, like grow ice on ice skating rinks.
Doesn't it also just mean that your ice isn't going to melt in your drink?
I think so.
Is it cold? Is it actually...
I don't think it's cold. What they did is the research...
Oh, the ice is room... Yeah, so it wouldn't even be effective in your drink, really.
It would just make your drink...
room temperature.
Right. They're studying this thing called barium fluoride, which is a natural occurring mineral, which I think has the actual common name for this is the best name of any mineral I've ever
heard. Let's hear it.
Frank Dixonite.
Frank Dixonite?
Frank Dixonite.
What is that?
I think there was a guy who found this mineral whose name was Frank Dixon, And it became Frank Dixonite.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
The Jorge Ribasonite.
Yeah.
James Williamsonite.
So using this mineral, they were able to kind of find, I guess, I don't know exactly how they do this, but it turns out that they're using this mineral to try to force ice to form at room temperatures, to condense and to form at these temperatures.
Yeah, it still doesn't really make any sense, does
basically,
it?
Basically, they said that, yeah, it doesn't.
It's not ice anymore.
The researchers' goal now is to produce environmentally friendly synthetic materials for efficiently inducing snow. So I just think, like, if you could, I guess, do this without having to freeze water somehow,
yeah,
it creates, like, a whole different kind of snow that would
be useful. I bet hockey would be
in other areas, but I don't know if that, I mean, that...
Is this necessary?
Do we need...
If they did this, you could have hockey in places like Arizona and Florida.
If they do this, we're going to have to change a lot of expressions like cold as ice.
It'd be just like room temperature as ice.
Yeah, ice is not that cold.
We'd have to caveat that.
Yeah.
Cold as natural ice.
I'm going to look into it a little bit more.
Forming ice.
I'll look into it a little bit more. Find out exactly what is happening with this.
I don't even think you have to look into it more.
No? You don't want this in your drink? Just a couple room temperature ice cubes.
All right, James, your third and final story.
My last story here from the University of California, San Diego. So there's megabytes, and then what comes after megabyte?
Kilobytes.
No.
No, wait, no. Gigabytes.
Right. Do you know what comes after that?
Terabytes.
You know what comes after that?
Gazillionite.
Terabyte.
No. Petabyte.
Petabyte.
So the terabyte barrier has been broken, everybody.
And James, just to back up for those who are not familiar with what you're talking about, what exactly...
storage space.
Thank you.
It's a point of data.
Right.
Right.
If you're into computers.
Right. It's the size of how much... The number of ones and zeros that make up your file.
Do you remember when megabytes were, like, huge?
Yeah.
Like, you got a computer with, like, 3 megabytes, and you're like,
oh, that's actually... You know what? We could really nerd out here, because then it actually goes into kilobits. 8 kilobits make up 1 kilobyte.
Yeah.
1,000 kilobytes make up a megabyte.
Yeah.
1,000 megabytes make up
gigabyte.
Gigabyte, and so on and so forth. Anyway, so these folks, there's this competition, the World Cup of Data Sorting.
Ooh.
Which
that sounds awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's... But you know what?
Are there vuvuzelas? It's
a little crazy because I think it's these are the places that make our computer, you know, our IT infrastructure run.
We should care.
We should care very much. They just broke the terabyte barrier, which it's a world record. They sorted more than 1 terabyte of data, which, as we know now, is 1,000 gigabytes or 1,000,000 megabytes, guys, in just 60 seconds.
Will and I just high five.
Jorge and I high fived.
This was at the UC San Diego Jacobs School of Engineering. They tied the world record for the fastest data sorting rate. They also sorted 1 trillion data records in 172 minutes. Where would this be useful? Where would you need to do this stuff, guys?
On my computer.
Advertisements on Facebook, custom recommendations on Amazon, up to the second search results on Google. Those all result from sorting data as large as multiple petabytes.
So, like, we're not satisfied with, like, search results already kind of coming at you? Like,
faster. Think about it. There's more and more and more information. Yeah, right? There's something like 24 hours of video gets uploaded to YouTube every minute.
Can I quick sidebar? Isn't it funny how, like, impatient we've gotten? Like, literally, if I'm trying to load a website and it doesn't load, like, right away, I'm just like, I'm off.
The whole problem with the speed of technology, because
I used to sit there and wait when it would be like, line by line.
Apologies to my mom, but I go up to see her where she lives in a fairly rural area.
42K modem.
And, you know, everyone's used to the speed up there,
Yeah.
It's not phone, but it's like a satellite deal, but it just takes longer, obviously, than this. So, yeah.
So they,
you like
not only
boil a cup of tea, right, come back, and a page is loaded.
Whatever,
have a nice cup of maple syrup.
All right. So They not only did they set these new records, they used 1/4 the number of computers as the previous record holder to achieve the same sort of...
Doing more with less.
Exactly. 1/4, which means that they're getting faster and more efficient, Will.
Good. Much like our show.
Faster and more efficient. So
we should focus on that for the feedback.
And one last thought. This is... tell me if this makes sense to any of you. In order to break the terabyte barrier for the Indie Minute sort, they built a system made up of 52 computer nodes. Each one is a commodity server with 2 quad-core processors, 25 gigs of memory, 16 500-gigabyte disks, all interconnected by a Cisco Nexus 5020 switch.
What does not make sense to you about that?
I don't know. It seems clear as day to me. Clear as mud.
All right, James, great job, buddy.
Yeah.
Great reporting this week.
Do you know how much 100 terabytes of data is equivalent to,
what?
Guys? 21,000 single-layer DVDs.
How many cups of water?
It's 142,248 CDs, assuming that each of those CDs are 703 megabytes.
And what is the equivalent in Tic Tacs?
Five.
All right, Jorge, your third and final story, please.
I picked the story because it had Thunderstone in the title.
Efficient and faster.
Thunderstone.
Thunder Boomer.
Thunder Boomers. Go ahead, my friend.
This is kind of neat. So archaeologists were investigating graves in Avaldsnes in Karmøy in southwestern Norway. I don't know if I pronounced any of that right.
I don't know.
And it's supposed to be from the late Iron Age, which is from 600-1000 AD. What they found inside the grave, though, they found a Stone Age axe inside the grave.
I thought you were going to say they found a...
Al Capone's wine.
I thought you were going to say they found
it was
like
on the same layer of oil
caveman.
As pearls that were from the Iron Age, which is where this tomb was dating. And they started kind of asking questions like, why would this axe be buried amongst an Iron Age tomb, and they were finding older artifacts? And apparently they found this kind of quite a bit. And they realized that basically people wore... grave robbers back then. Like, there was no law against going into tombs and actually taking stuff from tombs.
Maybe it was frowned upon.
No, I don't... Well, I don't... It says that people would do it. I mean, they were superstitious, they said, so they would go into...
Hey, Tor, what are you doing tonight?
And maybe pull out things that they wanted to keep from their ancestors or whatever. So. Plundering of graves, they said, was a very common act in the 19th century and actually legal. It was not until the Cultural Heritage Act of 1905 that made it a criminal offense... for people to excavate cultural monuments. So they think that finding these older artifacts, like the Thunderstone, they talk about this thing that they found called a Thunderstone, which is a rock, the idea of a rock falling from the sky caused by lightning, and then would protect you from getting hit by lightning. So they would pass these along. So if people were buried with these, they would
be dug up
and then given to somebody else. And like, so that's why they're finding older artifacts in newer graves.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Kind of neat.
I just want to touch on the idea that these thunderstones basically fell in connection with lightning, and they thought they came from the thunder god. You know the thunder god,
yes.
Right?
Thor.
And his mighty hammer.
Yes.
I think there's a documentary coming out about that guy
soon. Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
We should check it out. It's a feedback.
That's a cool story. It's steeped in sort of mysticism.
Yeah. I don't know.
Kind of like Will Johnson, everybody.
But I think it used to puzzle archaeologists for a while, but then they... kind of figured it out. I think it would be weirder if you dug up an old grave and found a new... Like, what if you dug up a grave from the Stone Age and found, like, I don't know.
That'd be weird.
An iPod.
Yeah.
An iPad.
That would be evidence of time travel.
Right.
That would be evidence
that
of
would
time
be
travel.
Evidence
that would prove
travel.
It once and for all.
We should... Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay.
We should...
Nothing.
Well,
we should
whatever
do,
idea
we should
you...
Nothing.
Yeah.
You were going to suggest something that would go
no,
against
he was
the
gonna suggest
Cultural
something.
Heritage Act of
But then he traveled to the future and heard what it sounded like.
Yeah. Yeah, he realized.
Jorge has knocked his papers on the table.
He's
like
tapped
20
the desk.
Times.
He's knocked his papers.
It's like a nervous tick almost.
I gotta stop that. Yeah. I apologize to the listener who finds it offensive.
All right, let's recap our stories and get out of here. Okay. I mean, actually get to all our fun social liaison work.
All right, I'll do my stories. My story is latest green packing material, mushrooms. My second story was artificially controlling water condensation leads to room temperature ice. And my last story was solving the Thunderstone mystery.
Converging weather patterns explained. You can also go to discoverynews.com and read more about that story, as well as the chance of an asteroid hitting us in 2182. That also can be found on discoverynews.com. And finally, the Daytona 500 of breaking the terabyte border story.
What?
I don't know.
You're Why are you being so weird?
I'm not. I was trying to remember exactly what it was, and I couldn't.
All right. Fair to Midland job this week, James.
Computer scientists break the terabyte
What's Midland mean?
Border in 60 seconds. Is that better,
like
Will?
Like kind of okay. I think. That's fine. Jorge, did you get some...
I did. Printed out some Facebook.
Some correspondence from our listeners. What do they have to say
Thomas
this week?
Thomas asks if me and James received our prizes for winning the last few years. The answer to that is no, we haven't. Wait, I won. The first year I won something from James. It was like
you did win.
Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah.
My second year I didn't win. James didn't win. We really have been doing this. This is the fourth year.
Yeah, we've been doing it for 45 minutes today. Let's
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, let me just say, I went by the person's off. I now know where the person who's responsible for the T-shirt sits.
Oh, okay, because Dan was asking.
I know,
about that.
And I actually...
I've stopped asking about that.
I went by there, and they weren't in. But I've sent 3 emails.
Thanks, James.
BJ writes in that chopsticks would make really good one-tined forks.
Yeah, I had not...
Owner.
Wait, you've ordered the T-shirts?
No, I'm trying to find out what the status is on them.
Trying to get a status
can
update.
Can we get a T-shirt with a threak on it?
The next time you
Basic
send...
Basic Brewing James writes in about a threak sighting where he actually took a picture with his phone, which I think is funny because he was sitting there eating and just was like...
Picture of a three-tonged...
Threak.
Fork. A threak. Cool.
Threak. Okay. Bill writes in with a picture of a seven-tined fork.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a serving fork. So I don't know if a serving fork
What is the
really
difference
qualifies.
Between a tong...
Or prong.
A tine
I meant
or
prong.
A prong? What's the difference?
A tong?
No, a tine. A tine or
prong.
They are tines. They are tines. And, I erroneously
prong,
said tong, didn't I?
But what's wait, what's a prong?
It's like a
then?
Pronghorn antelope. Right?
I know, but someone says like a three prong.
That's an example
something.
Of something that has a prong, Jorge, but that's not what
right,
a prong
so what are,
is.
A prong is not an antelope.
And a tong is just two things that kind of are that's,
yeah, I said tong, didn't I? I apologize.
I got that. I'm sorry.
I don't know why I said tong. So
I don't know why.
The question is really about prong or tine.
What is the difference? You know who we can ask?
Listener challenge.
Listener challenge.
First one to email us. First one to email us an answer.
Yeah. What will?
At pod_cast at discovery.com gets our praise on the show next week.
Nice.
Good luck, listeners.
Go.
I like that.
All right. Anything else, Rory?
No, that's from Facebook.
All right. Well, if you'd like to email us again, it's pod_cast@discovery.com with the prong tine competition. James, do you have anything to add?
Go to news.discovery.com/feedblog to vote, and also go to discoverynews.com to read more about the interesting things that we've talked about on the show. Thank you very much.
And Jorge.
And go to these Facebook messages I just read. You can write your own, and I will read it on air, probably.
How do you do that, Jorge?
Go to follow
you
us
type
at
the
Discovery's
question.
Friday News Feedback Fans Unite on Facebook. Or go to Twitter and follow us at Feedback Nation.
Join the Facebook page with more members.
Yes.
All right, everyone, because we have two of them for some reason. Yeah. Everyone have a great weekend, and we look forward to speaking with you next week, the first show in August 2010. Join us then on the Friday News Feedback with James Williams,
nice.
Jorge Ribas,
I like this.
And me, Will Johnson. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you.